Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hi, this is Billie Jean King.
This is Marion Bartoli.
I'm Mats Wilander.
This is Mary Carrillo.
This is Pam Shriver.
This is Yannick Noah, and you're listening to the Tennis Podcast.
Well, hello, folks, and greetings from Tennis Podcast Towers, Melbourne, where it's 1:39 a.m. and tennis is happening.
Of course it is. It's what we do.
Here we are again in the middle of the night.
Oh, hooray for Matt. And hooray for the troopers that are Victoria Azarenka and Zhu Lin. They still have a way to go. Azarenka leading 2-1 in the deciding set. She lost the first to Zhu. She took the second 6-1, although it felt like a far closer set than 6-1. And they're locked in battle in the third. Azarenka has the break, but it feels like it has a way to go. I predict a post 2 a.m. finish.
Yes, I think that's a fair bet.
Okay. I think we've made our point about that. I think scheduling will come up again later in the show.
I just want Azarenka to be asked about it on court is what I want. And I want her to tell us what she really feels about being asked to go onto the court at 11:33 p.m.
Because she is somebody that's not afraid to say things.
Yeah.
Yeah. And maybe she will. I don't know whether there'll be a press conference after this match. I don't know how many journalists will have stayed. There aren't any Belarusian journalists on site, so you're relying on international journalists, and I don't know whether anybody would stay for this, but it'll be interesting to see, and we'll keep you posted in future pods. We'll let you know who wins this match, even though you'll know by the time you're listening. That is what we do here on the Tennis Podcast. What a service we provide. It has been a day at the tennis, hasn't it? We lost Iga Świątek from the women's draw today, the world number one, the dominant world number one, the reigning two-time Grand Slam champion. And we lost her in straight sets to Elena Rybakina, 6-4, 6-4. This was the first match of the day, well, the second match of the day in the Rod Laver Arena, but it followed on from an actually hilarious Legends match.
Yeah, in which the Bob and Mike Bryan, who look more ripped than they did when they were on the tour, rather overdoing it against.
they didn't get the memo about Legends tennis. Yeah,
absolutely destroying Mark Philippoussis and Marcus Baghdatis.
I had a really weird moment where I thought that the Bryans were back because Legends doubles teams don't normally make any sense. You know, it's normally, for example, Marcus Baghdatis and Mark Philippoussis. And you think, oh, well, that's obviously the Legends. And I saw the Bryans and I was like, huh? What have I missed?
Are you advocating that they split up and go with other partners and then face each other? That'd be good.
Would watch.
They might need to do that in order to prevent them from winning the tournament everyone. Awkwardly easily because... yeah, it was. They didn't get the memo for sure today, but it was highly amusing. They were finished before 12:30, which was the not before start time for Świątek and Rybakina. We were in our seats for first ball.
Oh, yeah, that was fun.
The three of us, the first time the three of us have sat in the press seats and watched an entire match together this tournament, and we picked a good one. I would have loved a third set. But it was a great, great two sets. Seeing Świątek, I know you find watching her cruise very, very compelling. And I do enjoy it, but I always want to watch a battle more than I want to watch anybody cruise. And watching a player as dominant as Świątek try and battle and find solutions, which she was unable to do, I found that very, very compelling. And actually, that was something she talked about after the match, sort of inability to problem solve, and we'll come on to that. But Elena Rybakina, clinical, clean, beautiful ball striking, composed. She had it all today. I know the conditions suit her. I know we didn't think this would be sort of, if you'd said before the tournament, Iga Świątek's going to win, losing the, or perhaps before the draw, Iga Świątek's going to lose in the fourth round, you'd think, wow, gosh, heck of an upset. But in fact, Matt, it was you that I think after the first round, catching a glimpse of Elena Rybakina, just started to have eyes on this potential matchup and the possibility of an upset. But even so, Elena Rybakina today, wow.
Oh, she was awesome. And as you said, the conditions suit her, but you still have to go out there and perform in those conditions. And she just laid down a marker in the very first game, didn't she, by breaking Świątek's serve, just catching hold of some massive returns off both her forehand and her backhand. And I don't know. I mean, I felt like Świątek had opportunities there for sure. Like, I don't think it was a given that Rybakina was going to win that match just because she was playing well in good conditions. I did feel like there was maybe more that Świątek could have done. She might have some regrets about that, probably that second set in particular where she was ahead. But even so, just the task of facing Rybakina in those conditions just looks really uncomfortable. You know, she's got a massive serve, she's got massive returns, so hard to get the ball out of her strike zone,
so hard to ruffle her,
impossible, I think. I mean, literally tournament organizers have been sort of trying to do that since Wimbledon, and not necessarily deliberately, but she just doesn't seem too sort of ruffled. And now she was absolutely awesome today. And if anyone had any sort of doubts about Elena Rybakina's status, and I do think people maybe have done since Wimbledon, it was a weird tournament, and her not getting points made it weird. And as a result of that, she's had some really tough draws since Wimbledon. You know, in the first round of tournaments, she's kept running into top players, so she maybe hasn't had, you know, incredible results since then. But she's a Wimbledon and a Grand Slam champion for a reason, and that reason is that her peak level, which she was pretty much at today, is fearsome.
She didn't try anything different, did she, Iga Świątek? That was something that you were struck by, David. Tried to sort of get to the bottom of a little bit in the press conference, which was a fascinating post-match press conference with Świątek. She is brilliant with the press. She really is. She's not defensive. She's not afraid of the press. She handles questions thoughtfully, even when she's devastated, which she clearly was today. She really is fantastic in front of the media in that sort of scenario, and we're very grateful for it. But yeah, you were struck by the similarities between this match and her defeat to Elise Cornet at Wimbledon last year, which obviously ended the streak, and the fact that she just kept on trying to go for it. And obviously going for it is brilliant, and it's one of the things we love about Iga Świątek. But when it's not working, it can look quite alarming.
You've got to get the thing in. It doesn't matter how hard you can hit the ball.
And tennis analysis from David Law.
Yeah, I mean,
get the thing in.
Well, when she was playing Cornet that day, I can't imagine the number of unforced errors she hit in that final set. And she wouldn't pull back. And I think part of it is because she was so at her limits mentally and emotionally, psychologically. She'd had enough, really. And she just couldn't fight anymore. So she was just swinging. And in this instance, it really was an interesting press conference, because the fact is she admitted to really feeling the pressure in the way into this tournament. And you asked her about it, and you followed up and you asked her to to elaborate on why she said she hadn't had a good time recently. It was a great, great follow-up. And the fact that she just said, you know, I've felt the pressure. I've been playing not to lose rather than to win. And being number one was problematic in that way for her this particular time. And I think that she has to, when she's playing a player like Rybakina, who's the sound of the ball strike on her is different to the other players. It is a lovely sound. I mean, it's quite, it goes through you a bit. You know, it makes me shudder.
I find her quite hypnotic as a tennis player. There's such a smoothness to her.
She's a good watcher, I think. And I really actually liked watching Świątek trying to decode that, and she goes 3-love up in the second set. And you can't imagine at that point that there's not going to be a third set. But I feel she panics sometimes in a way that she's so conditioned herself in a successful way to want to dominate that she's trying to dominate off fiercely struck Rybakina forehands. Well, that's not going to work, really. You've got to take something off it.
I agree on the panic. She didn't seem to be playing with the confidence and the steely, baked-in self-belief of a dominant world number one. There was a frailty there, which we saw hints at the United Cup when she was so devastated by that defeat to Pegula, I think, wasn't it? So there were clues, but it was still quite alarming to witness, and a little alarming to hear her comments in press. She was incredibly frank. She said, "The last couple of weeks have been hard. I felt the pressure. I wanted not to lose more than I wanted to win, and I need to work on that. I wasted too much energy worrying before the tournament and in the first days of the tournament." This is not new for a world number one. It's a cliche for a reason, isn't it? That staying at the top is harder than getting there. But this is kind of the bear trap, isn't it, for world number ones to
unusual to hear them say it like
absolutely.
That.
Absolutely, they might say it after the fact and reflect on it and say, "Gosh, at that time, that's how I was feeling, and it was tough." But to hear her say it when she's in it is fascinating. But a bit of a worry.
Well, she's been on that brink, that knife edge for ages. And that's, I've said to you before, when she's dominating, she's either just the right side of it. But I often worry about it teetering over.
Yeah, I agree. And I was particularly struck by that line that you read out, Catherine, that she gave you in terms of not wanting to lose and not finding joy in winning. That's a dark place to be in, I think. That's when it stops being fun.
Relief rather than joy.
Yeah. And I think I'm sure there's always some relief attached, but you've got to find joy. And I don't know, like, how great it seemed to be Iga Świątek during the streak. You know, I think she was absolutely on the right side of things then. And it does appear to have switched over. And she's a fantastic tennis player, so I don't doubt that at all. But it didn't sound necessarily like she did after Wimbledon, which was sort of, you know, a bit more defiant in terms of, you know, there's another Grand Slam coming up. This was a bit more, this could take a while. Like, I think she said she'll get over the defeat, but how she's feeling, I think, could take a while yet to sort of get back to how she wants.
Yeah, David, you asked her about the similarities between her situation now and in the summer last year when the streak ended at Wimbledon, and how fantastically she regrouped and came back and won the next slam. You know, what can you take from that experience to draw on here? And she said, "I see these as completely different situations. I don't see many similarities," which was fascinating because on paper, there are many similarities. But what I heard there was, "I'm not feeling like I'm going to come back and win the next slam like I did."
Yeah, it sounds like a bit of a rebuilding job is required for her mental approach. And the fact that she was so upfront about that so soon after a match found that very interesting. Mm. It's impressive, actually.
And I think she was able to write off Wimbledon in a way, in that it was grass. She'd just been on this incredible run. I think it was... I don't want to say she was expecting to lose at Wimbledon, but I think she knew she was...
Less of a surprise.
Yeah, I think she knew she was very vulnerable there. I think probably her own expectations were, you know, probably slightly lower of herself. Mm. And this is a different situation to that, I suppose.
Elena Rybakina is as convinced as we are that she is fueled by her court assignments, both here and at pretty much every tournament that she's played since becoming the Wimbledon champion. She is not rising to questions about it, isn't she?
We tried.
I got burned by Elena Rybakina impressed today. I was high on how well the exchange with Świątek had gone. Asked Rybakina what I thought was a reasonable question. And she humiliated me. Thank you very much, Elena. I think she misheard
a crucial word
in the question, which was first time on Rod Laver Arena this tournament. She said, well, you obviously haven't been following my career very closely, because I actually played Ash Barty on the Rod Laver Arena.
I was quite glad I had my back to you at that point. Mm.
And you can't talk back in a press conference.
No.
You can't go, but you didn't hear me.
Well, hold on a minute.
Yeah. But, you know, I wasn't the only one that she, I was the only one that she, you know, completely humiliated. But I wasn't the only one that she shut down when trying to probe at that area of discussion.
But I do think she spoke with some confidence in that press conference. I think she's getting used to it all more, and I think she looks like she's more of a stronger athlete when she's on the court. I really sense that she's put some muscle on, to be honest, and upper body muscle, and I sense that she's put some extra confidence into her system for dealing with all of us. You know, she just seems to have a bit more, sass, yeah.
I
really.
Mean, feel free to row back on the confidence, Elena, at any time, just a little bit.
It might have just gone a bit too far with it there.
I mean, the thing is, those, I think, are all perfectly legitimate questions because, I mean, she was the one who brought it up herself after Wimbledon, wasn't she? I think it was at the US Open in her pre-tournament press conference there.
Yeah.
She was very unhappy about the court assignment she'd got in Cincinnati, where I think she played Muguruza and they were way out on, I don't know, court 4 or 5 or something. But maybe now she feels ready to win this tournament. And so she's playing all of that stuff down because it would be a distraction or whatever. Maybe the fact that she was so sort of open and outspoken about that at the US Open was perhaps a sort of sign that she maybe wasn't in a sort of winning mindset, perhaps. There were other things sort of on her mind, whereas here she's a lot more sort of, I don't know, just ready, I think. I think she's playing on the court as though she really cares about it and it makes a difference to her, but she's not going to talk so much about it because that would, you know, maybe arguably be a distraction that she doesn't need.
How ready, though, is it possible to be for an in-form Yelena Ostapenko? Because that is what Elena Rybakina now faces. A mere half an hour after Rybakina's win over Świątek on Rod Laver Arena on the second court, Ostapenko was completing a 7-5-6-3 defeat of Coco Gauff. Now, I'm gutted to see Coco Gauff at the tournament. I always think a tournament is better with Coco Gauff in it, on the court and in interviews and in the press conference room. She lights up a competition in every way, but...
Catherine loves Ostapenko.
Ostapenko is everything.
She was today.
The tennis today was unbelievable. Coco Gauff did not know what to do. It was only her athleticism and tenacity that made her competitive in that match, because on the tennis front, she was rocked on her heels. Ostapenko just brimming with confidence, taking the ball early. I just heard the word thwack in my head every time she hit the ball. She took issue with every Hawkeye Live call, pretty much, even when it was very clearly out. There was a point in the second set where she made the most stupendous face after Hawkeye Live called her very obviously out serve out. I mean, it was several inches out. And then she just goes and hits a second serve ace. And that is the energy that I am here for. And then, of course, well, not of course, actually, Laura Robson brilliantly asked her about her issue with Hawkeye Live in the on-court interview afterwards. She said, are you a fan of or how did she phrase it, Laura?
Didn't she say, do you trust
it?
Do you not believe that Hawkeye Live is getting these
and
things
she goes,
right?
Honestly, no. Which is a gif that you'll be receiving daily in various different contexts. It's already doing the rounds on social media. She is compelling at the moment, Yelena Ostapenko. Another brilliant press conference. She seems to have maturity and perspective while somehow still maintaining her fearlessness in both her tennis and her personality. And look, in sometimes that fearlessness costs her, because she's uncompromising, she's unprepared to change her game, a little bit like Iga Świątek today, and sometimes it will be a horror show. But when it's on, blimey. She was quite something today in every way.
There's no other player in the world that could have got as near to her ground strokes as Coco Gauff did, because there's nobody else that moves that well. And she still hit her off the court. That is in a sensational sight.
Mm. Yeah. I really hope that Rybakina Ostapenko features the Rybakina and Ostapenko that we saw today.
It's just so hard when you get two strikers like
that. It is. It could be
an error fest.
It could be an error fest. Or it could be a dream.
Oh, let's go with the dream.
Yeah.
I asked Rebecca, you know, you said you had to go for it against Świątek from ball one. Do you do the same against somebody else who only knows how to go for it from ball one? And she said, I'm not going to tell you.
We both got absolutely sassed by Elena Rybakina today.
Savaged by Elena Rybakina.
She spoke, Ostapenko, in the press conference about how it took her a few years to adjust to her life turning on its head.
That was fascinating.
After winning the French Open. And she said it with a smile on her face and a total acceptance of what that all meant. As I say, this incredible perspective, a real kindness and grace and patience with herself. She was like, yeah, I won the French Open. I was a teenager. It took me a few years to figure that out. I don't think she has any regrets or feels like that's lost time. I felt like I hope Emma Raducanu is watching this press conference and hearing these words.
You see, I thought she was saying she'd lost some years, but that it's okay.
Like, yeah,
that she's okay with it.
Well, you know, they're not lost years. You know, they're just.
But she is admitting that the circumstances of winning so young, and not really being ready for it, and all the stuff that comes with it—photo shoots and interest and people, and in her words, people expecting me to win every tournament. It really cost her probably some of her development. And I'm quite sure this is going to be some of that that's happened to Raducanu. But I also see with Ostapenko, she can come out the other side. And this is her. And I love seeing her now in this position and talking so like an adult, but still with that twinkle in her eye.
Absolutely. This sort of childlike wonder and fearlessness. But also a maturity. It's absolutely brilliant. Coco Gauff was very upset in defeat. She'd been crying. She cried again in the press conference, but still spoke brilliantly. I don't think this defeat is necessary. I don't think we've learned anything new about Coco Gauff this tournament, either good or bad. Is that, do you know what I mean by that? I don't think I've really changed how I feel about where Coco Gauff's at this tournament. I don't think there's any cause for alarm, but it's not progress.
Bit of a missed opportunity.
Mm.
Yeah, I guess so, because especially given that Iga Świątek has been such a problem for her. You know, that matchup they were due to meet in the quarterfinals. I'm not saying Rybakina is much easier, but, you know, we do know that tennis is matchups, and that's been such a problematic one for Gauff. Świątek, for once being out of the way, it does feel a little bit like a missed opportunity, I suppose. But I agree. I feel very similarly about Coco Gauff as I did a couple of weeks ago. She's amazing. She has still a problem on the forehand in particular. And she got beaten by a player who, you know, kind of at her peak can hit anyone off the court. So a bit of a tricky, tough draw there as well. But I did feel like, yes, she was using her athleticism and she was trying to make it a scrap. I felt like she needed to just make more adjustments. Like, I don't know, just mix it up more. I didn't feel like she changed her game that much. I mean, I know that's hard when Ostapenko is literally just sort of pelting the ball at you as hard as she possibly can.
You've got to try and disrupt her rhythm, though,
haven't
you? It's the only thing you can do in that scenario.
You've just got so little time in best of three. You know, when you're setting a break down, you know, what you need to be doing then is sort of changing your game. But you're on the brink of defeat. You don't want to be doing something that's out of your comfort zone. It's a very tricky thing to do. And
both of those matches made me yearn for women to play best of five, because, you know, Coco Gauff has the fitness and the athleticism and the composure, I think, to try and figure things out from two sets to love down. The same with Iga Świątek. You know, we talked about her panicking, that when things aren't going your way in best of three, well, I mean, it's simple maths, isn't it? You have less time, you know, and that is more likely to induce panic. I'd love to see Iga Świątek trying to figure that out from two sets to love down and
yeah, me too.
And battle.
By the way, Netflix and Ostapenko.
She's up for it.
Ostapenko's up for it.
And we're up for it.
Yeah.
So make it so. Both Andreescu and Ostapenko this week have said yes. I would say yes to Netflix if they asked me.
Catherine and I double teamed Ostapenko
they
to
are
get the answer.
No-brainers. I said, look, this is a really polite sport. And you're not concerned with politeness. You're just yourself.
Yeah.
And a lot of people really enjoy that. Do you think tennis would be better off if there were more people like you? And in a roundabout way, she said, yes.
Yes.
I agree with her.
I said, given that, as you've said, people maybe don't know what the real you is, would you be interested in going on Netflix and telling us all about it?
She said, yes.
Yeah, she said,
brilliant.
Yes.
No brainer. Sign her up. I am going to need to defer to you two on Barbora Krejcikova and Jessica Pegula's match on the John Cain Arena, because I came home this afternoon because I had a 7 a.m. start to go on the ABC sports chat show Offsiders this morning, which was brilliant. I did it last year. I'm doing it again next weekend. Loved it. But I'd only had 3 hours sleep. And for the good of this podcast, I came home for a nap. I thought I'll watch Pegula Krejcikova on the telly first and then I'll nap. But it wasn't on the telly. They were showing two men's matches on the two channels, and Krejcikova Pegula was unavailable unless you are able to sign up to some thing that you have to have an Australian address for. Anyway, I was annoyed, and it's another example of why scheduling matters. But Tell me about the match.
Just another very impressive performance from Jessica Pegula, I think. Two quite different sets. The first very close, 7-5 to Pegula. The second much more straightforward. And even in that first set, though, I felt like Pegula was the better player. She just couldn't quite shake Krejcikova off. You know, she had a break twice, which she lost. And they had these really competitive, drawn-out games. And I thought, oh, okay, maybe Krejcikova is sort of sucking Pegula into that sort of, yeah, that quite drawn-out style that she has. But Pegula just didn't get involved in that. I felt like she sort of neutralised Krejcikova's game pretty well and then was really clean on her own ground strokes and hit a lot of winners and just played really, really well. And again, that was all the more impressive because Iga Świątek had gone out just a few hours earlier. The whole sort of feel of the tournament changed, and particularly for someone like Jessica Pegula, who I know beat Świątek the other week, and that's a result that's got everyone, I think including us, really talking up her chances here. But she has had a Świątek problem at the Slams. She's not alone in that. And for Świątek to go out, that meant that Pegula's draw was opened up, and she was probably suddenly, I don't know, maybe the favourite for the title even. Certainly maybe the favourite to reach the final. And it just didn't look like any of that had even crossed her mind. You know, she's so able to just play her game and even just not be distracted by anything. And I thought that was exactly the Jessica Pegula that we saw today. There's a relentlessness to her in a way that I think, you know, makes her a good practice partner for Francis Tiafoe. You know, he likes playing with her because she's so sort of relentlessly good. And it's not in a really aggressive way. It's just in someone who is so controlled and knows their game and can go onto court. And you just know exactly how Jessica Pegula is going to play. And at the moment, it's such a high level. And even someone like Krejcikova, who I thought played pretty well, couldn't actually live with it for much longer than a set.
I'm blown away by how well she's dealt with her new status, because I think this is new status for Jessica Pegula. She might just about have been in the mix maybe once or twice before, unconfirmed, can't quite remember exactly, but she's hovered around the mix. Maybe I've never heard people, and quite a lot of people, pick her for a title, a major title pre-tournament, as they have done this tournament. And that's only now enhanced by Iga Świątek going out and her composure today in that scenario. Despite the fact that I didn't see the match, paper.
I only joined it at 5-all, and there'd been 55 minutes by that point. And she then went and closed that out. She broke and closed it out. And I just thought, mentally, she is just a giant at the moment. So strong. Krejcikova was pushing her and pulling her around, trying to do all this stuff. She just doesn't let go. Doesn't give you a real glimmer. You would have to take it from her at the moment, I think. Mm. And the thing is, without Świątek in the draw, who's going to take it from her? Maybe Caroline Garcia, maybe Sabalenka, someone like that. But goodness me, it's kind of, unless Pegula's playing a level that isn't really her, and this is a hot streak. And I don't think it is necessarily a hot streak. I think she's raised her floor. Mm. I think that she's not going to give it to anybody. Somebody's going to have to play plumbing well to beat her.
Well, it looks like the next someone is likely to be Victoria Azarenka. She is currently serving for the match against Julin, 5-4, 15-all, although this set has been a break fest, so at 2:12 a.m., there still could be a long way to go.
Yeah, I just feel like with Pegula, sometimes players have a moment, and maybe you don't even know that it is your moment, but you look back and you think that was their time. And I just really feel like we're in that time with Jessica Pegula, and always think of Milos Raonic. I'm not comparing Jessica Pegula to Milos Raonic, but I'm just saying...
You always think of Milos Raonic when...
Only now. I think of this moment thing. And his was...
I thought you meant when you watched Jessica Pegula.
No, not at all. Literally never.
I always thought Matt was pretty good at this.
But I'm just thinking in terms of a moment.
Yes.
Like you think back now, and it was kind of that grass court season of 2016. And he was unfortunate. He ran into peak Andy Murray.
Mm.
But that was kind of Milos Raonic's time. And a lot of that was due to injury. And I certainly don't wish that on Jessica Pegula. And I hope she has, you know, many more years. But right now, she's just in such a peak, and it seems like the draw is kind of set up for her. You know, she's played Ash Barty or Iga Świątek in her Grand Slam quarterfinals, and you know, Zhu or Azarenka would be big tests in the quarterfinals, but it's not Ash Barty or Iga Świątek. It just sort of feels like it's coming together for her, and you know, maybe she won't end up winning the tournament, but I sort of think she might.
Yeah, that's a fantastic point, actually. It is to break back points for Zhu Lin.
the rally's there.
I'm really hoping that we can get the result of this in the next couple of minutes so that we can very briefly say what our thoughts are on Victoria Azarenka being back in the Australian Open quarterfinals. So I'm going to bias a few moments by reminding people that we... Throughout the Australian Open, are sponsored by On Location, the premium hospitality and experience provider that are sending us to Indian Wells.
Hooray!
Indian Wells. She's a Sunshine Doubles. Double champion. No, not doubles. Double. Sunshine Double.
I bet she could have won the doubles as well.
Victoria Azarenka, isn't she?
Yeah.
It's no mean feat.
That's right.
And speaking of the double, we'll be going to Indian Wells, but if you... if you're a US or UK resident and if you would like to try and win tickets to the Miami Open, the second part of the Sunshine Double, then you can enter our competition because Steve Fogel's International Tennis Tours are offering a package to one lucky Tennis Podcast newsletter subscriber in the US or the UK. They'll win a three-night stay at the Miami Open Hotel for two guests, breakfast with... insert sort of slightly C-list tennis player here.
Who will get a throw under the bus?
Someone.
I'm going to go for Rusevori.
Emil Rusevori. Yes. Right. Breakfast with Emil Rusevori possibly included. Can't confirm, but it's a definite possibility. Tickets to two full day and night sessions with premium hospitality and transportation to the venue all included. The link to subscribe to the newsletter is in our show notes, and the URL to enter the competition is toursfortennis.com/podcast. tours4tennis.com/podcast. We're also offering a 5% discount code to all Friends of the Tennis Podcast for all Steve Fogel's International Tennis Tours during 2023. And it's match point Azarenka.
Oh, it worked out a treat, assuming she takes it.
If it is
Azarenka. If only we had a commentator.
If it is Azarenka, does she have a chance? I think that... Sorry to dismiss her chances of getting any further before she's even got to the quarterfinals, but I think that's a tough matchup for Azarenka against Pegula.
I think it's a tough matchup, but I think she always has a chance.
And
she hits a backhand cross court passing
shot. Okay, now maybe I think she's got a chance.
Yeah.
That was
she's
good.
Always got a chance in Australia, Matt. Huh?
Oh,
she's won it twice.
Yeah, you can't write Azarenka off. I believe they've met in the at the Australian Open before. That was a couple of years ago, and Jessica Pegula won. That was her first Grand Slam quarterfinal. That was a big moment for her beating Azarenka.
10-year anniversary of her second win, Azarenka.
Yeah, and that was the year that Sloane Stephens beat Serena Williams, wasn't it? And in the final, Azarenka had her panic attack. When she was off the court, you know, it was a really challenging time, I think, for her in the spotlight and being the player looked at and trying to get used to it all. And I don't think people quite got her, really.
Incredible that she defended that title.
Yeah, absolutely. Actually, it's a huge achievement.
Underrated achievement.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns, so you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
What about the men's tennis that we've seen today? A 5-set, not quite thriller, but almost thriller, I've written, between Stefanos Tsitsipas and Jannik Sinner. Is that a little bit unfair? I felt like it was a very, very good 5-setter, but I'm not quite... that. Putting it in the absolute, you know,
given what we've
upper
had this week, you know, this was exactly what you said, a very good 5-set match with two very good sets played by Tsitsipas, two very good sets played by Sinner, and then a nervy final set, but which, in his words, he suddenly found his serve again. And I actually found his interview with Jim Courier really quite insightful in that way. And he's relaxing in interviews, by the way,
This is Tsitsipas, by the way, who won the match. I failed to mention that.
I thought Sinner's got a poor record against Tsitsipas. I thought Sinner really improved and showed progress. And I thought Tsitsipas showed some real nerve at the end.
Yeah, I went through many different feelings, I think, during this match. I mean, Tsitsipas started it so well. He looked really assured of himself, really confident. His backhand was holding up really well. His forehand was doing a lot of damage. I actually think I came onto court after he was 2 sets to love up, and I was talking to Eleanor Crooks of the Press Association, and I said, right now, if I could sort of pick a men's champion, I think I would switch to Tsitsipas. You know, I just think I've been just so impressed by him. And then, of course, he went and lost the next 2 sets, and it was looking like he might not even be in the tournament after I made my big change of prediction, which obviously I'm not allowed to do anyway. But
ahead of Djokovic.
Well, I just have doubts over Djokovic, and I feel like maybe I felt like Tsitsipas in those first 2 sets would sort of be able to exploit that Djokovic. But anyway, then Sinner had this comeback, and I think the sort of story of those first 4 sets really was just a huge number of break points that Sinner was generating and largely not converting. Tsitsipas was sort of generally playing the bigger points better, but Sinner still leveled it up at 2 sets all, and he's got this incredibly fast twitch arm, Sinner. I find watching him up close pretty fascinating. He's such a slight, small tennis player compared to most of them, and yet he's one of the most powerful. It doesn't quite make sense.
No, it doesn't. I agree with that.
And yet it's really compelling. But then I must say, I thought Sinner played a terrible final set. Really bad. Didn't create any break points. Tsitsipas served better, but Sinner had been getting in so many service games of his, and he didn't at all in the fifth.
He had 20 six
I think
break
so.
Points
and didn't create,
up until the fifth set.
And then didn't create one in the fifth set. Yeah.
Okay,
and
well,
then also played a couple of horror games on his serve. He got out of one of them from Love 40 Down, but then the next service game, he was Love 40 Down again, and it just sort of cost him. And we're now in a situation where three slams in a row, Sinner has lost a big five-set match. It's been a good omen. Beating Sinner in five sets, Djokovic at Wimbledon went on to win the title. Alcaraz at the US Open went on to win the title. Maybe Tsitsipas here, but I do think we have to start thinking it's time for Sinner to step up and win one of these. And it's not just the five-set matches. It's matches against top players. I think Hannah pointed out that he's now 1-15, I think, against top fives on the tour and at Slams. Mm. Like, there seems to be a little bit of a ceiling there.
Are we in why do I lose all the close matches territory with Jannik Sinner? Imagine you're in a lift with Jannik Sinner, David. You're an ATP communications manager again, and Jannik Sinner turns to you tonight and says, why do I lose all the close matches? Are you saying it's because you don't quite have it, Jannik? Or are you saying...
Imagine if I said that to Federer.
Or are you saying, it'll come,
it'll
lad.
Come.
It'll come. Just like you said to Roger Federer back in the day.
Yeah. I mean, look, there's a big difference between where Federer was then and where Sinner is now. Federer was nowhere, really, at that point. He wasn't getting to quarterfinals of Masters 1000 events, let alone semis of slams and all that sort of stuff that Sinner's pushing on, you know. And Sinner's a couple of years older than Roger was then. But I think my answer is no. I do think that final set will require some proper analysis from him and from Darren Cahill. Because I think Cahill has probably helped Sinner get a lot closer tonight. You know, just tactically, I think he, but there was also a really good mid-match adjustment from Sinner in the third set. You know, he went from kind of being incredibly explosive but in defence to very explosive in attack.
Yeah.
And he also he realised that he could pick on the Tsitsipas backhand, and he was relentless on that side. And then suddenly he stopped doing that in the fifth set. So he needs to be forced to watch back the last hour of that match and understand what went wrong. So my answer to you, though, is no, I'm not worried about his five-set record or all that. I think it's, you know, he's just won his first match from two sets down. He's just come back from two sets to nearly win this. I think this is just work in progress.
Mm.
And David is the expert on those lift conversations or elevator conversations, depending on what part of the world you're in. Stefanos Tsitsipas will now face Jiří Lehecka in the quarterfinals, and that is because Lehecka came from a set down to beat Félix Auger-Aliassime and confirm the Netflix curse, because all players featured in the first five episodes of Netflix, the Netflix series, and to be fair, there are other players featured in part two, although I think all of those are out apart from Aryna Sabalenka.
It's gone well.
but yeah, Felix is out. He was a setup in this. I'm very keen for your feelings about this, Matt, because I'm just very interested in generally in your takes on Felix Auger-Aliassime, because you have a little... I am not faithless, but I don't have quite the faith that you have. But it's a very confusing situation for me, because I don't have total faith in Félix Auger-Aliassime, but I do have total faith in you and your takes. So it's all very confusing.
That's your first
mistake.
And
I want you to tell me how to feel about this.
No pressure.
Gosh, it's okay.
A very big question.
Well, first of all, tell us, how does Félix Auger-Aliassime feel about this? You went to his press conference.
Yeah, and he was downbeat, of course, and he said the thing which we've been saying all tournament. He never played well in Melbourne this week. He didn't.
Why is that? I wonder.
He didn't play well, and he had no answer to that that he was willing to share. He did say, I have one or two ideas, but he didn't go into detail on them. I think I'm a big believer in Auger-Aliassime's top level, and I think perhaps naively I thought that he would have that top level this tournament. You know, maybe a sort of Davis Cup effect that we've seen other players have in the past. You know, he was pretty brilliant in the Davis Cup, and that was a big thing. And he was brilliant at the end of last season. I know in different conditions, end of the season, I do think I factored all that into my belief in him. But he never had that top level, and without it, as we've said before, he's not a particularly flexible tennis player in terms of mid-match adjustments. He just sort of keeps doing the same thing and hoping that it works. And eventually, he was going to come unstuck, and he did today against Jiří Lehečka, who was awesome and has been awesome the whole tournament. He's beaten Čorić, Norrie, and Auger-Aliassime now. That is some run that he's on.
Yeah, he's a good player. I don't want to just talk about this in terms of, oh, disaster for Felix, because Lehečka's a serious player.
He is. I like how much he sort of rates himself as well. Yeah. There was two lines. One in the on-court interview where the interviewer said, oh, well, it's going to be tough, isn't it, against Sinner or Tsitsipas? And he said, well, you said that last time against, you know, before I played that. Felix or Norrie. You know, he's aware of that. And he was also asked in his press conference, has this run sort of come sooner than you would expect? And he said, well, the run's not over.
I love it.
He said, let me assess my run when it's over. And then I'll tell you, you know, what my expectations were and whether I've matched them or not. He's love sort of that. Full of belief and confidence. And that really shows in his game. But yeah, I mean, to go back to Felix, I think one thing that did strike me watching this, and I know everyone expresses themselves in different ways on court, et cetera, but you know, we've been up close with Andy Murray in the last few days, and you see him just clearly trying absolutely everything, you know, in terms of mixing up his game, in terms of outwardly expressing how he's feeling, in terms of, you know, some dark arts maybe a little bit as well. Absolutely everything to drag himself into a tennis match that he's struggling in. And it just feels a little bit like with Auger-Aliassime that it just sort of lets it happen. It's like, what are you doing differently in this contest to change it? And I'm sure he is on the inside, but it doesn't really come across.
But the thing is,
on the outside,
he has his point winning patterns, and he just repeats them. And if they don't work, that's it.
It's so fascinating,
I agree,
isn't it? Because he's clearly such a clever guy.
Yeah.
He's a clever chap, but sometimes his tennis looks brainless. When it's not working, it can look sort of dumb. Like, why are you doing that? It's not working.
I don't think he can do anything else. I think this is his game. I mean, it either works or it doesn't. I don't think he's got any options, really. I don't see any.
Punchy law.
I mean, he can go to the net more, maybe, but I mean, he's not a finesse player. I don't see a great sliced backhand or a.
But you can learn a sliced backhand. That is something that we've seen players.
He wants to dominate with the serve and the forehand, and the problem is if those shots aren't really connecting, I'm just not sure. I'm just not sure what there is left.
I do agree. And I suppose then the question is, well, why weren't they connecting? It seemed to me that this tournament was kind of set up for him to play well, you know. Why didn't he play well? And
bit windy. Didn't have any of that when he was playing in Davis Cup and all those indoors.
But I mean, he played indoors the other day and he didn't play well. You know, I don't think it was a conditions thing. I don't know.
Like you said, he didn't. He acknowledges he just was never quite there this time. That must be really disconcerting.
It's a fascinating talking point, isn't it? And I think will remain so for some time because of this sort of, you know, he looks like he's been factory produced to be a tennis champion.
Yeah,
and that is what's so interesting about his story.
Yeah, and some of his fellow players on the tour call him the chosen one, don't they? You know, he's got that sort of...
What a thing around his neck that is.
Well, yeah, and...
That's like next-gen baby fed, isn't it?
I guess I would
That's what Dimitrov had, isn't it? I mean, he got called that. And it was tough for him, I think.
I guess I will just always be pulled in by that. You know, I suppose Auger Aliassime, for me...
He's your Dimitrov.
I suppose he is, because he was that age.
He was the
first sort of brilliant junior that I knew about.
We spent 3-4 years, Catherine, at the start of this podcast, talking about Grigor Dimitrov every 10 minutes.
Mm. There's no need to relive that.
Grigor Dimitrov relived.
Couple of things.
That's happening.
That'd be a bit sad.
One day, that's happening.
I'd happily relive the semi-final he played against Nadal here.
Oh, yeah, that'd be good.
One of the great matches. Yeah. The second men's quarterfinal from this top half of the draw will be Sebi Sebastian Korda against Karen Khachanov, which I've realised is a horrifying rematch of an absolute nightmare that took place at Wimbledon last year. A nightmare for us, a nightmare for them. Terrible.
Was it Wimbledon last year? I think it might have been Wimbledon 2021, I think. I could be wrong.
13 breaks of serve in a set?
13 breaks of serve in the fifth set.
Big servers on grass.
It was...
What
were they playing at?
This is because...
How do they have 13 breaks of serve in a set, in a tie-break set?
Well, because it's long set at Wimbledon in the fifth set.
Ah, it was then.
So it was 10-8
in the
end.
So yes, it must have been 2021 in that case.
I get it.
Because by last year, yeah.
My mathematical brain was starting to struggle there.
Korda beat Hubert Hurkacz in a five-setter. Again, not a thriller. They never played their best at the same time. It did go to a deciding set 10-point tiebreak.
That's when it was thrilling.
Yeah. Yeah, and it very impressive for Korda to win and back up the Medvedev victory despite playing nowhere near as well as he played against Medvedev. I think that's just as big, really.
Yeah, I was watching it up close because our commentary box is right on the court there, and watching him go through it was so interesting. That was a real live education from start to finish for Seb Korda. He found out about himself in that match because he wouldn't know. He didn't know he could get over the line until he got over the line. And, I mean, when he won the 7-point moment, you know, he got the 7th point on, I thought he'd won. I totally forgot that it's 1-10. And otherwise, you're not celebrating.
And Danielle Collins.
Yeah. And then Hurkacz went and won the next 3 points. And it started to get really stressful. And I thought I thought Korda had gone. When it went 7-all, I thought he'd gone here. He was 7-3 up and that's 7-all. And he still figured it out. And he finished with the most stunning match point to win it.
He was the one that seized it, wasn't he? Hurkacz stopped going for it, was just hitting the ball back in court, hoping for Korda to miss.
Just, it must be such a big deal for a player to win a match like that when they've never done it before.
Mm. And on that point of him sort of going for it a bit more, we speculated, didn't we, after his loss to Djokovic in Adelaide 1, I think it was. You know, would that be baggage or would that be a sort of learning experience? And he very much said that he felt like he was too passive in those crucial moments against Djokovic. And he said he had that in his mind today to be more aggressive, try and be more assertive. And I think it was only right at the end of the tiebreak when he sort of managed it, because he was very tight during most of the tiebreak. But, you know, he got there. And as you said, that final point was just absolutely awesome. And I heard a lovely story that he told in the press conference, which I think maybe I'd heard before, but had forgotten, in that obviously Radek Stepanek is coaching him now. And he actually credits Radek Stepanek as helping him get into tennis because his father was coaching Radek Stepanek at the US Open when Stepanek played a sort of epic night match with Djokovic, and Sebastian was in the box, and he said that day he just totally fell in love with the energy and with the crowd, and he sort of he sort of knew that tennis was what he wanted to do, even though, you know, it was already in the family. And yeah, it's sort of come full circle, because now Radek Stepanek is coaching him. So I thought that was a nice story.
And
there.
And his dad, Peter Korda, former champion here, of course, he's not here, which I think, you know, I love it when parents are there watching. I'm a sucker for it. But I also think, you know, it's great. Let him forge his own path.
He is...
He's in Florida.
Yeah, he's
watching
at the LPGA
Nelly.
Event.
He's got other exceptional athletic children to be watching. Spotted, papped on the golf course this weekend. So Korda will face Khachanov for a place in the semifinals. We haven't got much time here, so I'll just tell you that watching Matt watch the third set of Khachanov Nishioka was the highlight of my day. Matt expected not really to have his full attention focused on Khachanov Nishioka, and he was absolutely living for it, because the score was 6-love, 6-love, 2-love, Khachanov. And no, Nishioka wasn't injured. He was just appalling. He won 2 points in the second set. 2 points. In the words of Matt Roberts, I think a club player could have won more than 2 points against Karen Khachanov in that set. He goes, good club player, but still. and then the comeback starts.
He meant himself, didn't he?
Nishioka finds his game, and you start contemplating the biggest comeback in tennis history. It didn't happen. Went to a tiebreak in the third. Khachanov got over the line. Good on him. Because in the back of his mind, at least, maybe in the front of it, he must have been thinking, oh my God, what if I lose this? It'll be the worst.
So embarrassing.
The worst moment in sporting history.
Mm. And there's one way, I mean, there's lots of ways, but one surefire way to get the crowd on your side, and that's be 6-love, 6-love, 2-love down. I mean, they were going absolutely mad for Nishioka every time he was winning a point in that third set. And yeah, I ended up finding it really funny that Nishioka was mounting this comeback, and that it was even possible that he might win a set or possibly even the match, because he was so bad at the start of this match. He smashed a racket, Nishioka.
If he had won that set,
seemed very out of character.
Khachanov could have disappeared mentally.
Yeah. Oh, I wanted to see it. I
would have done.
Yeah, me too.
Totally. I wanted to see how Khachanov would react in that situation, and you know, whether Nishioka could sort of build some momentum and mount the most improbable comeback of all time. It didn't
but
happen.
But alas, it didn't happen.
It was Khachanov, fun while it lasted.
Khachanov Korda will be our quarterfinal. What have we got tomorrow? We start at 11 a.m. with Aryna Sabalenka against Belinda Bencic. We don't have time to get into it. You can probably imagine how we feel about that scheduling. I get why it's not the first night session match. I do understand why that's Alex de Minaur against Novak Djokovic. I take no issue with that. It shouldn't be 11 a.m. on a Monday, Sabalenka Bencic. That is not where it should be. After that, it is Magda Linette against Caroline Garcia, and then it's Holger Rune against Andre Rublev, and then, as I said, night session is de Minaur against Djokovic. And then we have a sensation second on Rod Laver Arena, Storm Hunter, formerly Storm Sanders, and her non-sensation partner, Elisa Mertens, in the doubles against Victoria Golubic and Monica Niculescu. Just hyped Australians in Australia.
Yeah.
Of which, curiously, de Minaur isn't really one. He's the only Australian
that isn't a sensation. He's the only one who is a sensation. And he doesn't get called one by the local.
For a sensation, you have to be sort of overachieving, I think.
Yes, I think that's a good way of putting
it. And Alex de Minaur just achieves.
Although, if
he beats Djokovic,
John Millman is the original sensation, and he's quite Alex de Minaur-y, isn't he?
In his own way, yeah.
Alex de Minaur's not happy about that.
Yeah, he's worse. Yeah. But I suppose that makes him more of a sensation.
We'll try and finesse the exact definition of sensation, but the primary ingredients are Australian and hype.
We saw the original inventor of the term today.
We did. So, Matt got very excited in the media cafe and he said, that's a sensation guy.
So maybe we'll go and have a word.
I've missed him. First on the second court, Bob Bryan is... Oh, hello.
Who are they beating?
Bob Bryan and Barbara Shett are taking on Mike Bryan and Cara Black.
Oh, that sounds dramatic.
Actually might tune in for some... Except I won't, because it's clashing with Sabalenka Bencic, so actually won't see a point of it. But I'll check the score. Second up, it's Donna Vekic and Pam on Linda Fruvitova.
Pam was playing the legends then for a moment.
With Donna Vekic.
With Donna Vekic.
One day, Pam, one day.
Go on, Pam.
And then final match. Oh, no, there's only a day session on second court tomorrow. Four matches in the day session. Third of them is the sensations, Rinky Hijikata and Jason Kubler. In men's doubles third round action. And then finally on that court, Roberto Bautista Agut against Tommy Paul. Blake Shelton and JJ Wolf are third up on the John Cain Arena. First up there is Elena Rybakina in doubles action with partner Anastasia Pavlyuchenkova. They take on Aoyama and Shibahara, the 10th seeds. And I think that is it. Oh, no, it's not it. All the way out on the Kia Arena. Karolina Pliskova and Zheng Shuai in fourth round action. That is the only singles match of the day on there. We've got four sensations last up on the Kier Arena. Oh, my, it's sensation-tastic over there. You've got, Goff Pegula in doubles on the Kier Arena. And then it's just, look, if you want double sensations, it looks like Kier is the place to go tomorrow. The second week is about to begin in earnest. In fact, it's already begun. It's 3:15 in the morning.
What are we doing here?
What are we doing with our lives? We're having the time of our lives is what we're doing. It's brilliant. This Australian Open is sponsored by On Location, the premium hospitality and experience provider, and of course Steve Fergal's International Tennis Tours that are offering that 5% discount code for friends, and the competition prize open to newsletter subscribers in the US and the UK. So make sure you subscribe to the newsletter for that reason and for myriad other reasons, Matt Stat included. We have our mascot for the tournament. That is Cordelia. Hello, Cordelia. She's majestic. David has his mascot, Maisie. I've got Xenia. Matt has Darwin. Billie Jean is sponsored by Billie Jean King and Ilana Kloss. She's not enjoying the cold. Back home is Billie Jean. Don't tell her how nice the weather is out here. We have our top folks and executive producers, Jamie, Drew and Hannah. And Matt, we have shout outs.
We've got Tristan Amy, who is in Pennsylvania.
Hi, Tristan.
Hello, Tristan. I don't know if there are any tennis Tristans. I think Tristan might be a one-off.
Well, I think you're an original Tristan.
And Tristan is a high school tennis coach.
Ooh.
There you go, see. Could have been a contender.
And also a florist.
Oh, that's a great combo.
Expecting that.
I like it.
Absolutely love it.
That's superb.
That's very like a storyline in a rom-com, isn't it? High school tennis coach, florist on the side.
That's right.
Yeah. Meets a potential romantic interest doing something floral. I don't know.
Cheers, Tristan.
I'll finesse the details. Thank you, Tristan.
We'll get back to you.
We've also got Wojciech Lizak, who is in Poland.
Like Wojciech Szczesny?
Yes.
Not a tennis player,
but an athlete. Athletic reference.
Yeah. I think I've done well there.
So exciting. We've got a Polish shout-out.
Is there a tennis Wojciech?
Feedback? Is that right?
Yes. Well, it's your era, David.
All right.
I think you're right.
Yeah. And I think Wojciech Fibak has some Hubert Hurkacz connections.
Yeah, I think so.
He's out of the tournament, though. So anyway.
Wojciech, thank you.
Thank you.
And finally, we've got Mike Petsalis, who is in Montreal.
Oh, hello, Mike. Love Montreal, one of my very favourite cities.
Like Mike Bryan, who we've been talking about in this show.
Who's going to do the Legends doubles double.
I'm probably going to win. Probably. They're probably going to win the Legends double for the next 12 years, aren't
yeah,
they?
That's true. Thank you, Mike.
Cheers, Mike.
Thank you very much to all of our friends of the pod. You're the reason that we're here in Australia, and it's brilliant. We're delighted to be here. We're loving it, no matter what time of day we're recording these things. So thank you for listening, and we'll speak to you tomorrow.
Small details or big surfaces, tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.